Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we ask the question, how many lakes does it take to leak an Intel roadmap? And we look at some PlayStation 5 speculation. I'm your host, Dinos Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McCain. Darren, as you are aware, every Hardware Asylum podcast episode has a number.
Yes.
Do you happen to know what number this one is?
No.
No? You should know. Actually, you probably don't know. You're just playing silly, right?
It's episode 99.
99. And this is the extra, meaning that it is the second episode that happened during the month 99.
It's like 99.5.
Yeah, something like that. But what that means that next episode...
Ooh, episode 100, the centennial episode.
It occurs at an interesting time of the year, which is Computex.
Oh.
And for Computex this year, I will be once again attending the AMD keynote, which is actually part of some of the opening ceremonies of Computex.
Very nice.
And supposedly, Dr. Lisa Su, is that her name?
Dr. Lisa.
She will be announcing something new about Ryzen and motherboards and some other stuff.
Very exciting. You know, very recently, she signed a bunch of Intel chipsets for the Anniversary Edition Ryzen, the 2700X.
She signed Intel chipsets?
No. She signed Ryzen 7 chipsets.
Yeah, the 2700X or something like that.
You can totally get one, an Anniversary Edition 2700X.
Is it true that they just took the 2700X and then put a sticker on it and her signature?
I think it's a hologram sticker, though. Does that help?
I think it does.
It might be faster.
And it might not.
Hey, but you can celebrate the anniversary of the Ryzen 7 if you wish. But I'm sure that's not what you're talking about.
No, actually, I'm going to go completely, almost 180, maybe 360 minus 270.
Seems meta.
It's like 90. Intel roadmap leak.
Oh, I saw this.
As published on Extreme Tech. Or I should say republished on tweakers.net because, you know, they want to advertise that they have Intel confidential information posted on their website and shared with the entire world.
I'm always amazed about these leaks, especially when someone takes credit for them. You'd think that Intel would have some sort of embargo against these folks, like you're actually risking something by releasing it.
Right. Well, according to Extreme Tech, this came from an Intel... came from an internal Dell presentation.
Oh, the Dell folks are at fault.
Well, somebody in the Dell camp is at fault.
Nice.
You know, because they claim it's not from the company, right? It's somebody like a contractor or somebody disgruntled or whatever say, oh, I'm going to take a picture of that slideshow. Or maybe it's the guy that's behind the computer flipping all the slides.
Oh, it's totally that guy. Dude, you're getting a Dell leak.
Oh my God, that's it.
I knew they'd come back to get him. Hey, but I'm kind of excited because if the leak is to be believed, we get a nice picture of what Intel's doing for how long? How big a leak is this?
2 years. So it goes all the way out to fourth quarter 2020 on this particular slide. I saw some of them that went out to second quarter 2021.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. The really cool thing is that we already knew that Intel was going to release 10 nanometer processors.
Yes.
But it's not the entire product line that's going 10 nanometer.
Well, I guess that kind of makes sense, right? Because they've got to start somewhere. So probably the performance line or something.
I think it's going to be the mobile line.
Oh. Uh-huh.
So if we look at this, and if I'm reading this correctly, I could be wrong. The first line at the top, and of course, I'm talking at a slide that you can't see because radio.
We'll link to it in the podcast if it survives that long.
Or not.
Right. No I'm sure leaks if you, here, no leaks.
No leaks, but we're going to talk about the leaks, gosh darn it. So at the top, we have Kaby Lake, Coffee Lake, that go from first quarter 18 all the way to second quarter 2020.
That's a long time.
And that makes a lot of sense because that is basically how long Coffee Lake and Kaby Lake have been out and will be out in production.
So we're looking at another year.
And then, but those are built off of, oh, this slide doesn't say, but 14 nanometer it looks like.
Sure. Okay.
And then if we go forward in time, we have a Comet Lake and we have an Ice Lake, which is on 10 nanometer. That's the one that everyone's been talking about.
Oh, I'm sensing a theme here. Everything's a lake.
Everything's a lake. We got Tiger Lake.
Tiger Lake.
We got Whiskey Lake.
Ooh, Whiskey Lake.
Which is a 2-core, 4-core processor. It looks like it's going to be a mobile part based off of the wattage.
Dennis, I know you're going to be surprised, but someday I hope to retire at Whiskey Lake.
You mean retire or pass out?
Somebody's going to have to see.
Let's see. After Whiskey Lake, it looks like we have an entire quarter as a gap, which is kind of strange. And then we have Rocket Lake.
What do they say? For every generation, there's a gap. Rocket Lake? Really?
Rocket Lake. It says right here.
Isn't that like a board game? They're really reaching on these lake names. Is that a real lake?
Supposedly they are.
Interesting.
Somewhere. I mean, Nehalem, for instance, right? Was named after a lake in Oregon. But you can actually drive there. Well, I have because, you know, Northwest.
Yeah, but that's just weird. I mean, it's like someone Googled lake and just picked the worst one on the list. Nehalem?
Yeah, it's...
It's like when you get one of those, like, you know, Keanu Reeves biblical angel movies or something.
Not quite following, but it makes sense.
All right. What else we got?
Well, I mean, Rocket Lake could be like a Guardians of the Galaxy sort of reference. Like, oh, we like this raccoon, and raccoons are from blah, 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 I like lake it. Place.
Seems timely. Okay. Yeah. What else you got?
Amber Lake.
Amber Lake.
I which is a four-core processor on the 14-nanometer process.
I may have dated an Amber Lake once. I don't know. Maybe not.
What about Skyhawk Lake?
Skyhawk Lake.
Comet Lake?
That can't be real. Now we're like in Star Wars land, Skyhawk Lake.
Well, this is in the third quarter of 2020, so it might change.
It does say it's a Y series. It's sort of interesting. So what is a... I don't know what I'm looking at here. U series, Y series. So what's the target for these things?
These are the different segments. So I believe the top one, which is H and G, is the desktop workstation market. And then we have a U series, which is likely a mobile process.
Okay.
And then we have, these ones are at 5 watt, the V series. Those are likely parts for ultra low power embedded sort of systems.
Okay.
And then we have the N series, which is even lower than that. And then they just keep going down. So each one of them has a different segment based off of a different market type. Some of these will probably go into things like routers.
Yeah, they have so, I mean, I gotta say, there is one that is called Lake Field instead of Lake in the M series here. But we have Cherry Trail and Elkhart Lake. I don't know, Elkhart Lake might be in Idaho. But
yeah, Cherry Trail.
Apollo Lake, Gemini Lake. I think someone needs to tell Intel they need a better theme.
Do you think they should go after Coppermine? Oh, wait, that's already been done.
Oh, too soon. Too soon. All right.
So let's pull up another slide. This one's a little bit more easy to read because this one goes all the way out to fourth quarter 2021, where we have Tiger Lake and Rocket Lake, second quarter 2021. Those are on 14-nanometer process. And the part that Extreme Tech kind of brought up was the fact that Intel said 10-nanometer, but it's not for everything.
Okay.
There's only Ice Lake and some of the later stuff. Like we have a Tiger Lake on 10-nanometer process.
And that's Q2 calendar year 21. That's a long ways away.
Yeah. But they map these things out so they know what they need, their goals that they want to attain. The shrinkage of the process is good for economics.
Right.
Obviously, you can pack more transistors into a chip and make them smaller or larger based off of what you need to have to get what you need.
Sure. And also good for heat, right? So good for overclocking.
Yes, to a point. So when you get the smaller processes like this and you start feeding it more voltage, the transistors tend to leak, which causes errors. So for instance, you know, in the main show this month, I talked about overclocking the Core i9-9900K. Which is a Coffee Lake process that they added two cores to. Well, two of those cores would run at 5 gigahertz, but then if I enabled all of the other 6 cores at that same speed, a lot of times it would crash. It was not stable.
Right.
And that is because those cores are likely of a lower quality at 14 nanometer. Now, if you had that same low quality at 10 nanometer, it wouldn't nearly be able to run as fast because of all of the power leakage.
But I'm still looking at this. It says Intel Client Commercial CPU Roadmap 2018-2021. Mm-hmm. And I am seeing all of the names that I recognize and some of the silly ones that we've talked about still say 14 nanometer on them all the way up to Q4 21.
Right. And that is why these not saying why they got leaked, but why the leak is interesting. Because Intel was claiming that they were going to go 10 nanometer, and a lot of people are speculating that if they go 10 nanometer, they will have a higher profit margin, which affects the stock.
Oh, yeah, which is good if you're an investor, and also good if you're a buyer.
And in this case, since they are not going to 10 nanometer, the growth and profit is more linear. It's not going to be spiking. So in this case, the processors will likely get more expensive as they come out later in the year instead of cheaper because of the process shrink.
So there's no reason to hold out for Rocket Lake.
No. I would say get yourself a Coffee Lake and then jump up to an Amber Lake.
Oh, Amber Lake.
And then hold out for the Tiger Lake because the Rocket Lake seems like it will explode.
Or if you're in a partying mood, just go straight to Whiskey Lake.
Yes. I like that a lot better.
That's sort of disappointing because I thought we were all looking forward to getting to 10 nanometers. It seemed like much sooner.
Well, I would hope so. But even the GPU manufacturers are having trouble shrinking the die that much. And part of it is the process itself, you know, because this is a, it's printing layer upon layer upon layer. And these processors now are multi-layered. I'm talking layers a lot here.
A lot of layers.
But they are three-dimensional. So you have a screen that gets laid down and then another one that gets laid on top of that to build up the transistor so that they go vertical instead of horizontal. And that compounds how the electricity has to flow through the die. It can increase how many errors are introduced, how many processors actually succeed, and how many of them get thrown up because they can't pass quality. And it also will impact overclocking, clock frequency. And until they can perfect that and make it more reliable, it's not going to be one of those where they can get any money back from it.
I get that, but it's safe to assume maybe, right, that because they're all 14 millimeters and they all say Lake, that these are more incremental changes as opposed to some sort of radical departure or new technology?
I believe they've gotten to the point where they can predict how difficult it will be to increase the technology in their CPUs, and they had to get away from the TikTok so that they could keep releasing products. They might be a small increment in terms of speed or quality, but they're not going to be changing the process as often as they did in the past.
Well, we all used to speculate with the Moore's Law, especially, that there would reach a point where there would be diminishing returns and where we would get the smaller incrementals, at least until we have a new breakthrough in the technology.
Right. And instead of just extending it out longer and running Coffee Lake for 4 years instead of 2 years, they are now trying to say, well, just do a little refresh. And that means for the enthusiast, you know, we might have an LGA 1152, right? Instead of 1150. And those extra, that's a different socket because of the different power mapping for that particular refresh. Sadly, that also means that you have to buy a new motherboard, a new socket.
Compatibility, of course. Yeah. Gotta make money somewhere.
Well, even with the 8000 series Coffee Lake, they're not compatible with the 9000 series Coffee Lake because of the power mapping that's different.
Well, you know, that makes sense because it drives you to more purchases, which keeps the money flowing. And for us enthusiasts, unfortunately, that means that we are buying products that aren't those huge steps like we saw back in the past.
Darren, a couple of weeks ago, you sent me an article to something on about PlayStation 5.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a huge PlayStation guy in our house. We kind of consider ourselves a PlayStation family. And recently, I've been looking at maybe moving up into PlayStation VR and a PlayStation 4 Pro, which I honestly haven't really felt any need for. And really, the only difference between the two is the 4K technology and better support for VR. So it's a very marginal step from PlayStation 4 to a PlayStation 4 Pro.
Yeah, it's just kind of like some tweaked and overclocked hardware.
Yeah, I mean, it's optimized for 4K, but I don't have a 4K TV, which might surprise some of the folks out there.
Shame on you.
I know, because I bought a beautiful 80-inch TV, and it's just not time yet. But that's beside the point. While I was out doing the research and looking at maybe purchasing a used one, I discovered that the PlayStation 5 stuff is all but concrete. The the specs have been released, and there is a lot of talk about what they are. Now, of course, as always, we won't know until the final product comes out. But PC Gamer has a pretty solid breakdown of what we're anticipating the PlayStation 5 will be. Now, before we get into the specs, I feel like it's really important to note that, of course, consoles, unlike PCs, take a little bit longer to roll out. And so they are, by just that major limitation, always a little bit behind the PCs because everything has to be compatible. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of research done into best performance, best compatibility to fit in that relatively small form factor.
Right. Well, sometimes you have the software, the game in this case, where it has to be backwards compatible. And sometimes, you know, like there's certain PlayStation 4 games that are not compatible with some of the old ones.
Oh, absolutely.
They will not play. You will have that obviously here. But then from a hardware standpoint, the way I see it, a console is, you know, a complete system on a board.
Right.
And all that has to fit within a certain form factor. You know, the original Xbox was a very large machine because it was using a desktop CPU, desktop CPU cooler, and it had to actually cool that entire machine. Whereas with PlayStation 4, it's actually rather thin.
Well, and I feel like people forget that to be competitive, these machines have to be basically just scaled down versions of desktop PCs. And the PlayStation has really been leading, although the Xbox arguably has been catching up over the years. Mm-hmm. But this is just another example of PlayStation leading. So I'm expecting Xbox to come back with a response at some point before this machine comes out. It'll be interesting to see what the next generation is going to look like. But I thought, Dennis, that we could take a look at least the leaked specs and get kind of an idea of what the PlayStation 5 comes out. Now, I feel like I should preassess this entire conversation by saying that they've made it pretty clear that this is not going to be landing in stores in 2019. So we're actually about a year away from seeing this. And that's important because we are taking a snapshot of the specs based on architecture today mm-hmm. for a machine that is still maybe over a year away. And that's always been the downside of PCs, which is where you get that PC master race versus the Xbox and the PlayStation, is because they freeze this moment in time. They build these machines and they build hundreds, maybe thousands of them, millions even if they do well. Mm-hmm. But they can't revive this machine and rev it like a PC, which is always the limitation.
Right. Well, it's the same thing when you try to send a drone into space. You know, like some of the rovers that landed on Mars are based off of technology that's 15 years old.
Now, of course, here at Hardware Asylum, we're huge PC enthusiasts. And
Have
these cutting-edge machines. PC Master Race for the win, right? But the reality is that there are huge advantages to the consoles, both the Xbox and the PlayStation 5, and that is once they've locked in that hardware, then the programmers can learn to optimize that. They can find all the tricks, and they can build around that. And, of course, the thing that we always complain about, right? Games that are developed for the console that are ported to the PC. So
that's the wrong way to go.
It is the wrong way to go, but it is part of the reality because these consoles are going to drive a lot of what the games are going to look like in 2020. So with that in mind, let's take a look with the assumption, of course, that what we're reading here is remotely close, and of course, subject to change. Mm-hmm. But this is a pretty solid description of what this machine is. So let's start with maybe the most important aspect, the graphics processing of the PlayStation 5.
Which is a combined CPU and GPU. And it turns out it's going to be based off the third generation Zen 2 architecture, sporting 8 cores and 16 threads. Now, that is the desktop part.
Oh, yeah.
Likely, when it goes into the PlayStation, it'll have to be cut down a bit, mostly because of heat.
Well, yeah, or the machine will be large, like the first generation PlayStations were relatively big, and then they revived them with the small form factors, which happens a lot in consoles as they learn to optimize.
Yeah, on the GPU side, it says the PlayStation 5 will have a variant of AMD's future Navi architecture, and they claim that the Navi, or Navi 10, is comparable to a GTX 1660, which is the GPU that just came out a little while ago.
Okay.
And that is 1060, 1070 range, depending on which benchmark you want to compare that to.
Well, now that's interesting. Now, we just talked about this in the previous segment, but they're talking about this being a 7-nanometer process, which will help with heat.
Yep.
And also power.
Power and heat. And also, it helps a little bit with frequency because you can lock it frequency differently because it's performance per watt is something that NVIDIA brings up all the time, and that really makes a difference in a small form factor machine.
Well, one of the things they talk about here is they speculate on whether there'll be a Navi 20 processor that will bring DirectX, ray tracing, and that stuff. And if the Navi 20 comes out in the PlayStation 5, which is a very, very real possibility, this Navi 20, of course, we're speculating here, will have performance much closer to an RTX 2080 Ti or even faster.
Right.
Depending on how well it's optimized, of course.
And they do preface this as saying that this is the high-end desktop graphics, which is typically 200 to 300 watts. So to have a 2080 performance, that's going to require a lot of heat, and it's going to output a lot of heat. So it, again, will likely be cut down to reduce that heat.
Well, yeah, or we might see another PlayStation with an external power brick, which is something that they've tried to avoid in the past.
Yeah, or external power or GPU processor or something like that.
So that's pretty cool, because that means that we'll get some of the modern video card technology that's just come out with the RTX processor and, well, you know, a little bit backwards compatible, but that's a different subject completely.
Yep. It still has to be that console. Otherwise, it's not a console machine, right?
So I think they make a very valid article choice here when they say the PS5's ray tracing capabilities are an unknown factor. If we're targeting the 2080 Ti, which it sounds like they would be with the Navi 20, we should get ray tracing, which is right now the huge jump in what the PC is doing. So I would think that the PlayStation 5 would want to utilize ray tracing, and at the very least, if not the DLTSS, to try to get that compatibility with what the current high-end processors for the PC are doing.
Right, and that's going to be a huge selling point going forward with any sort of a console, is the fact that ray tracing is available and you have hardware that will support it. You need to be able to pack that in there, and then, you know, PlayStation 5 might be the ray tracing machine. That's the reason to buy it. You know, that's going to be their marketing message, right?
Absolutely. And there's been a pretty good rumor mill separate from this article that the PlayStation 5 might ship with VR as they're trying to bundle that process, which of course would improve the price. My personal opinion is we may see a PlayStation 5 Pro package that comes with VR, but it doesn't make sense to me that they would force VR on all the customers. That's just going to price them out of the market.
Maybe. Although if you think about it, right? If you had the PlayStation 5 as a VR-only machine, you don't have to have a television.
Oh, now that's an interesting thought.
So, yeah, you bundle it with the VR glasses with the ray tracing. You don't have to have the resolution because of smaller screens.
Oh, which is totally sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy with what we talked about in a previous podcast, and that is that high-end TVs may be too late, that we may, before these 8K and OLED processors come out, actually have abandoned full-size TVs in favor of some sort of VR aspect. So let's talk about the CPU here, because this is interesting. Now, I should point out that I was surprised that once again, the PS4 is going with AMD, so that means a variation of the Ryzen processor. I know I'd kind of hoped they were going to go with the Intel, but you know, Ryzen has been really good in the low to middle end in the mobile market.
Right.
And so it wasn't a terrible surprise.
Well, and the Zen cores are designed for adding as many cores as possible, and they are pretty good with the power efficiency. So all you have to do is remove however many cores you need to have to get the wattage output you're looking for.
Now, this is where the biggest jump in performance is. According to PC Gamer, the jump is massive. A Jaguar core operating at 2.13, that's the PS4 Pro, by the way, not even the regular PS4, is relatively pathetic, to quote them, compared to the current Ryzen processor, which could have dual 128-bit AVX pipelines or even better, depending on which model they choose.
Wow.
So I think this is where we're going to see the biggest jump in performance. And honestly, it's not a surprise, because this is where the biggest performance boost has been in PCs also, as we've moved into multi-core processors that are more efficient and faster and better at multitasking.
To put that even further, since this is going to be a sealed ecosystem, you know, within the PlayStation market, the developers can start building their games to be multi-core, multi-threaded, whereas on the desktop side of things, they are still really shy to that because of compatibility.
Well, and for once, that might be a good reason where we're seeing the consoles driving the PCs, because if we're seeing a multi-core processor, which we're sort of expecting here, The AMD second generation Ryzen 7, for example, would be a tremendous boost, a 7 times increase over the PS4. And that's just assuming that's what they go with. We're going to get better processing, 5 to 10 times faster with the Ryzen 3000 series. We're going to get a whole bunch of benefits of that new technology. And the multi-core processing to me is the most attractive piece of it. If it is a true multi-core and scalable architecture like the Ryzen can be, then that will drive the PC programs finally into true multi-core. So we might see a benefit in the PC enthusiast side, and our games might be finally scalable multi-core architectures.
The bottom line here, the author talks about how at the very beginning of the article, it was going to be based on the Zen 2 architecture, but he's quoting down here is that we might get the Ryzen 3000, which is supposed to be released later this year. And if the PlayStation 4 is a year out, that might be an easy swap.
It's very likely. And if we do get that new Ryzen processor, it's going to be much faster.
Yep.
Now, this next part I think is really interesting.
They're talking about 8K.
Yeah. So interesting. I just mentioned this with the TV that we are seeing really finally 4K TVs and 4K architecture become affordable. So a lot of folks have been converting over to a 4K processor. And the downside is that the Xbox Premium, right, and the PlayStation 4 Pro support it, but it's only in a very limited sense. So we haven't had the true 4K or even 8K, which is what they're talking about, upscaling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the upscaling processor that gets added to the HDMI output, it does have a definite quality. So depending on how it's implemented and what chip they use, and the video stream coming in determines what the output is going to be. It may support an 8K panel, but it may not be actually outputting 8K content.
Well, that's a good point, because interestingly enough, if we are looking at current generation video cards, I feel like 8K processing is a bit of a stretch goal here, because really this is a pretty new technology. Even at CES, we don't see a lot of 8K stuff. No. And they may support 8K, but it may be more of a marketing ploy. It won't be a true performance 8K where we're seeing 60 frames plus. So that's kind of where I expect it to be. And it might be something that's scalable where they start with 4K and limited 8K support, but over time we might see something better. But the real advantage of true 8K processing, as they mentioned in the article, is that means that we'll get cleaner VR, which supports my thought that we might get packaged VR that is better than the current Oculus models. We're going to see a higher resolution PlayStation VR unit, which will helpfully drive the VR games.
Yeah. Well, the last time I looked at VR headsets, it wasn't necessarily the resolution that was the problem, but it was the refresh.
I think so.
And once you have, you know, something a couple inches from your eyeball, you kind of notice that a little bit more than if it's across the room.
And you make a good point. If they come out with even a 4K scalable VR headset, they're going to be driving the market. And it might be much like the Blu-ray player, their attempt to get a version of VR to become the mass adapted status there, and they might take over the market.
Mm-hmm. So on the PlayStation 4, the majority of the games that you play were from their cloud, right? Where you downloaded the game to your machine. You didn't have to load a disc.
Yeah, that was a hard transition for me to start buying downloads, and I do have quite a few still disc games, but the cost finally won me over. Now, of course, the downside is you don't have the physical media to sell when you're done with the game, but you do have this extensive library, and the PlayStation Online account helps with that too, with the instant library.
Right.
So yeah, I'm still kind of on the fence about it because you don't have that used title anymore.
Well, it looks like for the PlayStation 5, they're speculating that there will probably be a small NVMe drive running the entire machine. And then you got a 2 terabyte rotational that will store all of your games coming down from the cloud, obviously.
Well, that's definitely a cost cutter there. I can see that. But there's also some talk that it will support some of the faster external data structures, even to the point where you might get a PlayStation branded external hard drive and be able to take your games with you on the road.
That would be pretty cool, especially now that you can do external SSDs and get good upload and download off of your USB.
Well, to be honest, if you have a PlayStation 4 today and you haven't already upgraded the hard drive, then you don't know what you're missing. Because that's one opportunity to mod your PlayStation 4. It's relatively easy. You get a tremendous performance boost from putting a high speed or even a SSD drive in your PS4. I've done it in both of mine. Not even big ones, and the performance boost is amazing.
Yeah. So the article wraps up with audio, which we know that they can do audio in a very small form factor and make it sound really good. Does the PlayStation 4 have a line out where you can run it into an external amplifier and have it processed that way?
It does. In fact, it has an optical out, which was a bit of a pleasant surprise. No RGB. But if you have a relatively recent or even high-end system, you probably have an optical in. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. It does support all of the Dolbys. So I'm kind of expecting the next generation PlayStation 5 to support some of the newer functions. Maybe we'll see Atmos at 11.2, for example.
That would be pretty darn cool. But that's going to have to be coded into the game, obviously. So
it is.
It's based off of the game developer on whether or not they support that.
So one of the things that we talked about in a podcast way back is...
How far way back? Do you know?
Way back. We should jump in the way back machine. I might have to go diving for that. But the reality is that the Blu-ray, at least in the single layer, dual layer, which is what's in the PlayStation 4, PlayStation 4 Pro, is limited. Now, it's a large limit, but when we start adding those additional layers of audio, because we don't know, if we're a game designer, of course, putting those shoes on, mm-hmm. what kind of audio we're supporting. So we have to support 2x. We have to support, 5.1. We have to support 7.1. So the more of these we add as we move up into the Atmos and even newer technologies, that takes up space that could be used for the game. Mm-hmm. So if we move to the opportunity where we're using even bigger games and even more cloud games, the storage becomes more important. And that is especially true when we talk to audio. If you want true 11.2 Atmos, you're going to have the space for it. And that means bigger games, larger downloads. So there is a give and take there that I'm not sure where the PlayStation 5 is going to land.
Yeah. The last section, it talks about price, which, we don't care about price too much. We're enthusiasts. If we're going the PlayStation 5, we're going to buy the PlayStation 5. It's not like we get a cut down version if we get it on a Tuesday.
Well, there's an interesting thought there, though, because as an enthusiast, what point does the PlayStation 5 price you into just another enthusiast PC?
That is a very fine line, especially considering I'm looking down here. If it launches at $600, that's half the price of a actually good gaming PC.
Well, and that's not even taking into account all the different things that PlayStation 4 can be used for besides games. I use mine as a multimedia console. I listen to HD music through it. We stream on it. So there's a lot of additional things there. So ironically, the thing I'm most looking forward to in my PlayStation 5 is please let it be controlled by external devices. I mean, whether it be your Harmony remotes, your Alexa, your Google, that's, I think, what I'm most hoping for. And that just seems like such a small ask. I hope it comes true.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2019. Thanks for listening.